Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 118 of DM Discussions, the podcast for players and DMs alike, where we cover a wide variety of topics to help you with your games. I'm your host, Ryan Reeder, and with me, as always, is my good buddy, Ben Bumhopper. How you doing tonight, Ben?
I am doing pretty great and excited to talk about some Dungeons & Dragons, because I don't know if you know this or not, and it's, you know, it's been a mystery to a lot of people, but I like that game.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. You know, I've heard good things. I tried it out. I'm like, maybe I'll play this for, you know, like 6-7 years or so and do a show about it.
Yeah. One of the greats in the myriad of great tabletop RPGs.
Yeah, I would have to say it. I mean, there's a reason that it's popular. It's good.
There is. Oh, well, we've got this is going to be a fun show. I'm not sure, like, and I always say this, and then it doesn't come true. In theory, this will be a little bit shorter episode. We're going to do a little mailbag show. We got a few listener questions that we wanted to get to. But we first, before we jump into that, I wanted to start with just a little bit of news. The new Dungeon Master's Guide, like blitzing, has not hit full force yet. But
so
we're starting to get
it,
that. I think, honestly, of the three, that's the book I'm most excited for, mm-hmm, of the three new books. But Chris Perkins did do a little interview and lifted the lid a little bit more on the Bastion system, which I'm actually pretty excited for, especially my current campaign, which does take place in a legitimate city and will probably be there for quite some time. So using this system will actually be a very viable thing for this campaign. So in the interview, he said, "We wanted to find something that was meaningful, that actually had an impact on the campaign and the characters, that was another activity for players to engage in. The idea of you're building your home base, your safe space, your place where you go back to between adventures, and giving you a solid framework so that there's rules weight to it and it has consequence." So this is, again, this is like a brand new system for the 2024 books in the Dungeon Master's Guide. The Bastion system basically starts at level 5, and then it's got some specifics and it's got some like nebulous stuff. So the nebulous stuff is basically the DM gets to determine the size, the structure, the nature. Each bastion, mm-hmm, can have a number of basic facilities, bedrooms, bathrooms, kitchens, storage, closets, etc. They don't have any mechanical impact, their flavor, but there are special facilities which actually will have practical uses for the campaign. So from time to time, and I believe they recommended like every 7 days of game time, the players can issue orders to each of their special facilities, which may return helpful items, information, or buffs. There's 6 possible orders for special facilities: craft, trade, recruit, harvest, research, and empower. Their actual effects depend on the nature of the facility carrying them out. For example, issuing the recruit order to a menagerie returns new creatures who can help defend the bastion, while issuing it to a thieves guild causes them to steal a non-magical object of the player's choosing. Bastion has 2 special facilities at player level 5, 4 at 9, 5 at 13, and 6 at 17. So each order issued generates Bastion points, the number of which varies depending on the order given, and then Bastion points can then be spent to acquire magic items, spread word of a character's deeds for advantage on charisma checks, or even respawn a dead character within their Bastion. So that's pretty cool. And then there's actually Bastion random events, which may be negative or positive. They may receive friendly visitors, suffer the disappearance of their hirelings, or in rare cases, suffer an attack. And attacks are resolved based on Bastion defenders, whose numbers are determined by special facilities and orders. So basically, there's a bunch of like slightly more, I guess, macro stuff that you can do with Bastions, but it's another thing that can be give resources. It's another thing to tie your characters to the world. It's another thing to give you a goal or something to work on, something to do.
Yeah, and more so, it doesn't say so, but I'm assuming that this is also kind of going to be a gold sink as well. I would think that if you have like hirelings or something, they would have some sort of, you know, cost. Maybe the more people you have to worry about like food and shelter and things like that. I mean, who knows? Since you don't fully know what these bastions are, you know, or what they could involve right now, you know, I like the idea of having just kind of like a compound or like a, you know, a fortress somewhere, maybe an entire castle. I mean, they mentioned a thieves guild, which I mean, that's pretty cool. You know, kind of setting up your own underground facility and stuff. I mean, there's a lot of different things that can go into it. So cost is definitely going to be something since, you know, Dungeons and Dragons, it's always been, okay, you've got hundreds of thousands of gold. What are you going to do with it? You know, gosh, you kill one dragon and you're set for life pretty much.
Yeah, exactly. And they did also mention it's one of those things where each player can have their own separate one, or you could kind of have like a bigger combined one too. So it really just depends on the situation you're in and what the party wants to do as a whole. Like for, I am assuming like for my campaign that most of the players will have their own separate ones, or perhaps one or two of them will have a combined one and the other two might have their own separate ones. Exactly. So I'm very interested and excited to get those particular rules into my hands. And I mean, if you think about it too, Ben, we're just a few weeks away from the player's handbook.
Yeah.
The new player's handbook dropping.
And I'm glad I get that early access to it too. In fact, we were going to end up playing in my campaign last night, but long story short, we didn't. Doesn't matter why. And so we kind of talked about things. We talked about, you know, character building and the new player's handbook and stuff. And then I told them all, it's like, look, I'm getting the new one. Like I said before, for this campaign, we're going to kind of everybody take a look, see what's going on with the changes and if you want to change or not. I hope they all do. I think that would be great because it does open up a lot of new, you know, abilities and fun things to play with. So we'll see how it goes overall. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to make sure to do my thorough research of everything just to kind of see what's going on with, in the very least, the classes that my players play, and then how it's going to kind of affect the world overall going forward too, because that's going to be a big change. And with that, something too that you and I have discussed a lot is the fact that D&D Beyond has got to have some sort of update going on with it when this drops, especially with the character builder, because is it going to have access to old ones, new ones, or are you just going to be able to click to convert your character over and all that stuff? We discussed all that ad nauseum at this point. The cool thing is that I've already noticed that in some of the drop downs, they've changed the design for it. I mean, it's just a minor change. There's new artwork involved, which is pretty cool. And then when I was on yesterday, I did see a thing that said that D&D Beyond will be down for maintenance. And I don't remember the date and I didn't jot it down because I was, you know, I just clicked it off because I'm like, oh, it's a message. Cool. Whatever. But I think pretty soon here, it's going to be ongoing maintenance, whether we see something brand new or if they're just kind of like uploading the new data and waiting to kind of push it live when the book drops. Who knows?
Oh, August 20th at 5 a.m. Pacific. Oh,
there you go.
For about an hour.
Perfect.
That's what it said. So yeah, it wouldn't surprise me if that is part of potential like back end work.
Yeah, I would assume so.
Because like you said, if you go into the game rules now, they've really condensed a lot of the stuff. There's a lot of new art, and if you click on the classes now, all the classes say basic rules 2014.
Yeah, which is definitely a huge hint that's going to be updated sometime soon.
And it's all in little tabs now. So like I can click the arrow to pull them up and get them out. So it just easier filtering sorting just in that, like right now I see basically player's handbook, basic rules, which has all the, you know, your 12 base classes. Then it's got Tasha's Cauldron of Everything, which is the Artificer, and then it's got Critical Role, which is the Blood Hunter. So it's very interesting to see the start of this, but I would not be surprised if after the maintenance comes back on August 20th, there's a lot of new looks or new stuff. Or at least prepped to go live.
Oh, yeah. Have you made a character recently?
I did last night.
Okay. Actually. So then you see that in the dropdowns for some of those things that you're choosing, like feats or like subclasses or things like that, it actually has it written out on where you can act or where it is. Like, is it Wizards of the Coast stuff? Is it like Humblewood? Is it from, you know, MCDM? You know, there's like a bunch of different stuff that's kind of, you know, delineating where things are so that you can either know if you have it. Know if you don't, I guess. But also if you need to like look up something like what that reference is, it helps narrow down stuff and is becoming a lot more user friendly overall. So just like,
and they're going to have to.
Yeah.
They're going to have to because they talked about this becoming a third party content hub eventually too. Like they said, over the next 2 years, they want people to be able to like submit content rather than them having to do all the work on the back end themselves. Exactly. So it would not surprise me if this kind of turns into a new, like essentially DM's guild over time.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, they haven't said anything about it yet, but hopefully there's going to be some new homebrew stuff. Like, I think that'd be great if they had like some better templates for things, like especially when it comes to subclasses, maybe races or species, sorry, monsters, things like that. That, I mean, you can still do the whole like, hey, copy from someone else, but kind of go step by step like you do with the character designer. So that it's like, okay, we need to figure out, is this attuned? Is it not? What it means? Everything like that. And kind of use D&D Beyond as a teaching tool as well, which I mean,
it needs a new UI.
Yeah.
It needs a builder rather than just here's kind of the back end stuff that you use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like having a more guided builder or a more user-friendly like UI experience would be a huge boon to homebrew because it's basically stayed the same as it has since they introduced it.
And figuring out how some of those things work is a little bit tricky.
It's a little hard.
Yeah. Basically you have to copy something that's similar enough that you can, you know, edit it to make it your own and like, you know, swap out spells and stuff and still have the pop-ups happen and the rolls and all that stuff. It's like, I'm always a copy paste as opposed to just completely writing it myself. Cause I don't know how to do that. So, I mean, it's worked so far and I can crank something out really fast if I need to, but, yeah, having some sort of like template based thing, I think would work, you know, incredibly well, towards making it a much easier thing to use.
Yeah. So we're excited. We'll, and I guess we'll see here in a few days if anything happens now or if it's just prep work for something to happen when the new player's handbook goes live. But that's all, it's all coming very soon.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely. I'm excited about that. We're definitely going to have to take probably a whole session to do our conversion.
Yeah, same here. And by the way. Yep. We need to get a thesaurus because we're just super excited about a lot of new stuff coming. And that's all we're saying is we're excited. So we need to start working on that at those adjectives to really showcase how excited we are.
Yeah. Just the whole breadth of happy words.
I'm ecstatic.
Okay, so let's jump on in to our listener questions. We got some really interesting ones that I thought would be great to discuss. The first one is, you've already discussed what a good player should do and how to make DMs work easier. But what about players making in-game events more fun and exciting for the DM? Usually they're the one responsible for plots and twists and turns, but from a standpoint of collective storytelling, wouldn't it be great to have the DM surprised once in a while? What can players plot and prepare behind their back? And what would be boundaries to make sure everyone is having fun without derailing DM preparation, besides like new spells and abilities and combos and whatnot?
This is a really hard question to kind of go with because it is really going to be a per DM kind of thing with, you know, how comfortable they are to you know, let a player basically take over their world for a bit. And it kind of depends on the levels that you're looking at. Like, there is, there's a dungeon up ahead. Tell me what's going on. What do you expect? Like, what sort of research are you doing finding this stuff and everything? You can't really have the players populate something like that because they're the ones who need to run through it. But then you look at something along the lines of like, for example, my players, two of them came from a country called Erland. And I kind of told them, I'm like, hey, you know what? You're from there. Tell me about it. What's it like? What are, you know, how do you picture it and everything? And so they gave me some feedback, some thoughts on it and stuff. And I'm like, okay, so I'm going to kind of start building from there. But you don't get that kind of surprise that the person who wrote the question is asking for. So from that point, it's still helping out the DM, but again, you don't get that surprise. That being said, I mean, for world creation, I don't think it works as well unless you start looking at it from a smaller perspective. Like, you and I have talked about the I know a guy rule, and I think that this is a perfect starting off point for this topic. We've talked about it before where, you know, everybody's allowed a I know a guy. And essentially what that is, you know, the group's trying to make a plan about something, but they need to we'll put it in a very simple term. They are trying to do a heist and they need a carriage. And someone's like, okay, well, you know, who's going to get the carriage? The bard says, I know a guy. And then they just kind of throw their details out really quick about, yeah, I knew this guy from my bard college days. He and I used to, go drinking and everything. And his big dream was actually to own a carriage house. And
what a coincidence.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, you can kind of throw something out like that. And one, definitely a surprise. It's a fun little, like, you know, extra thing that's added in there. And it gives that player some agency to kind of create something small in the world that doesn't really affect anything. You know, it's not going to completely destroy the campaign because you know where you can get a carriage. So like a thing like that, I would say on with some of the smallest levels is probably a good place to start if you're really looking for like giving your players the ability to just surprise you and stuff, like outside of weird spell effects and combat and everything.
Yeah, no, I really agree with a lot of that. Most of the like kind of baseline inbounds things tend to revolve around, okay, we know we have a combat coming up as players. Mm-hmm. Let's try and plan that out as much as possible and execute on that plan. That doesn't necessarily have to be done in front of the DM, right? Although a good DM, if you do plan something like that out in front of a good DM, then the DM will reward you for that type of stuff.
Yeah.
Right. Because as DMs, we do not want to be confrontational with the players. We want to support the players. We want to encourage the players. We are rooting for the players. The things we're playing might not be rooting for the players, but we as DMs are rooting for the players. So that particular one can go either way. Like Ben said, you've got your I know a guy. Again, make sure that is discussed with the DM first before that rule is implemented.
Yeah, that is definitely a hey, this is something that's in the game. Have fun with it. You can't know 1,000 people. You get maybe, you know, two of these or something like that.
Yeah. And then I think that there is possibilities for doing this, maybe not necessarily behind the DM's back, but I do highly encourage, especially when you're just starting a campaign, and new characters, to work with the DM to integrate those characters into the world as much as possible. And with the DM, develop characters around your character, places, areas, mm-hmm. towns, businesses, et cetera, around your character. That is a great example of collaborative storytelling. Yes. And that's something that I love, and we did heavily in my current campaign before we even started. We really built up a arsenal of NPCs around all these characters, especially considering just the place that it took part in. Other than that, this is the big F right here. If you as a DM are seasoned and you are playing with seasoned players that you have played with before and that you trust, there is usually some amount of leniency to doing some of that story stuff as a player. Because you've played together before, you know each other, and you trust each other. Mm-hmm. That is probably the less common occurrence. Because I would not do that with just anybody.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
There are definitely players I'm playing with now that I've played with for years that I would trust to like throw a big curveball or something like that in this story that then I will take and run with. But I would not trust everyone to do that or not allow everyone to do that. And the other thing about that is you as a DM have to be, I guess, comfortable with your improvising abilities. Because if you are not, those types of curveballs can really throw you off your game.
Yeah. And I mean, this is something where I think that, you know, player decision and things like that, like that's kind of more what we're leaning in. We're not talking about, at least I'm not talking about like, oh, well, my character is going to do something just out of character. I mean, that's a big thing that can help and surprise and change stories as well. You know, just kind of play maybe against type for something based on, you know, how you perceive something or your backstory plays into it or something along those lines. And for me as a DM, I think those are really the big shakeups and stuff that surprise me that I really enjoy, because, you know, you see either character growth or, you know, something that obviously you didn't expect. And, you know, being the collaborative storyteller that I try to be, or being the, you know, the supporter of my players and stuff that I try to be, if something like big like that kind of happens or goes, you know, from left field and everything, I'm going to do my best to embrace it and work with it. Even as I'm standing there with my jaw dropped, like, oh my God, what's going on? This is amazing. I don't know what's up. So, you know, from just kind of how you play and what you choose, I think that's probably the easiest and best way that you can really kind of shake things up and surprise the DM as well as some of the other players too. It can be a lot of fun that way.
It can be for sure. And I think this, and I'm going to pull this up from our community section, because I think this is the perfect time to discuss this a little bit. In our community section, we've got, again, a wonderful video by Ginny D, entitled "Yes and Isn't the Great D&D Advice You Think It Is." And it is like all YouTube things. It's a little bit of a clickbaity title, but yeah. The premise is basically you don't need to yes and everything. There's like a spectrum involved, right? And I think that fits into this conversation very well.
Yes.
Because you have things like just saying yes or just saying no to things. It is okay to do both of those, especially if it's not something that fits, it's not something you're prepared for, or that you have the yes and, which means yes, you can do this and something else. There's also the yes, but, which can be useful in these types of situations as well. When players start making things up, right? Mm-hmm. You might be say, yes. Oh yeah, you can do that, but limitation, right? Yeah. Or no, you can't do that, but I'll let you do X, Y, Z instead. And so it's very good to have those tools in your toolbox as a DM, especially for situations like this, because we want to foster creativity. We want to foster player freedom, but not at the expense of either other people's fun or not at the expense of basically crashing a lot of what we've done or what the world is about.
Yeah.
Right. Because there are, of course, situations where players will do things which will cause you to be unprepared, or cause you to, you know, not have to do an encounter you might have planned for. I'm not talking about those things specifically. Exactly. Those are things that can just happen by happenstance, not the players actually meaning for that to happen necessarily, just as a result of dice rolls or as a result of the direction they picked. But I'm talking about those types of things happening as a result of the, like, players specifically in this case going, no, we're not going to do this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or one reason or the other, whether it's meta knowledge or whether it's something they don't want to do. And in that case, you need to have a different conversation just about the direction the campaign is going. Are people having fun? What do people want to see more of? What do people want to do?
Yeah, it kind of plays into, well, first of all, one rule of, like, just a big no would be like, oh yeah, and then I find this, you know, alien pulse rifle in the dragon's treasure hoard. It's like, no, it doesn't fit. Does not. We're not going there. But doing a no, but might be, but maybe this is how we introduce firearms into the game or something. You know, it, like, there's different levels of things that you can kind of go with that. Overall, though, I think that's, to a lesser extent, something that kind of fits with this is the rule of cool, which we've discussed a couple times before, where, you know, like, someone says, hey, I want to do this. It's, you know, this kind of crazy thing. It goes a little bit outside of the rules, or, you know, maybe a little bit outside of, you know, things that we've kind of set and figured out before. And you and I really try to rule of cool as best as we can, but still keep it in a grounded environment, because, you know, we want to have that consistency over a campaign. This is where the no buts or the yes, but, you know, all that stuff kind of comes in, because if someone says, oh yeah, I want to be able to, you know, jump 20 feet into the air, land on the dragon, just stab him right in the back, and then slice off two of his wings, and then do this and that, and like all this. It's like, the dragon's at full health. You can't do that right now, but we'll look at, you know, maybe landing on his back and, you know, bearing your sword in to hold on as it tries to shake you off or something, you know, like grow it into something like more epic than just I'm on his back. You know, it's like, yeah. Look at what they're going for, kind of go with it. And again, I know I kind of stepped far away from the surprising the DM, but in a sense, it all kind of ties together into that collaborative storytelling. And, you know, a lot of it comes down to trust, as you've said before, on the players knowing kind of like what they're not exactly what they're allowed to do, but what they can do. And then understanding the scenario and the situations that they're in on top of that.
Yeah. As a counterpoint too, one of my favorite things is when players come to the DM to try and plan cool stuff that might surprise the other players.
That I like much more.
Yeah. Yeah. I think usually that's much more valuable and that's much more interesting, because now the person who is in control of the world and the story flow is in on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And then they can help you with your cool secret or your cool reveal or something like that. Like in my current campaign, there's things about all the players that none of the other players know.
Mm-hmm.
But I know them with the players. And so I can do cool stuff in world with that I wouldn't be able to do if it was fully kept a secret from everyone, including the DM. Right. So I think that is by far the better way to look at things. If you're wanting to do those cool plot or plan type things, that's not necessarily, we're just prepping for the next combat, which we know about.
Yeah.
Right.
And like the best part about that is because when you work with the DM on it, you're working with, you know, the god of that world, and they know everything that's going on. So they're able to seed tiny things and make it so much more of an impact than if you were to just kind of throw it out without any sort of, you know, foreshadowing or, you know, maybe external knowledge or things like that. So it makes that impact even more so than just let's surprise the DM with what we can do.
Yeah. All right. Let's move on to our next question real fast, because this kind of ties in a little bit to the first one as far as story flow, right?
Oh, yeah.
So the question is, how much, both from a game master and a player point of view, do you want the dice to dictate the story outcome? As a player, it's great when the dice tell the same story your character is trying to tell, and agonizingly frustrating when it goes counter. I realize you don't get the high without the low, but what, if any, guardrails do you put into your games, or do the shiny clicky math rocks tell the story?
I mean, I love the shiny clicky math rocks. Like, first and foremost, they are great. Getting that rolling sound, just, ooh, it's good. But the number one rule that I have for this is that if it's something that has to happen, I don't have a dice roll associated with it at all.
That's huge. That's the big one. That's the big one. Never associate, never ask for a dice roll for something that you don't want to be put to chance.
Yeah. If your players are in the enemy stronghold and they need to find the secret door to get underneath to find the cultists, don't put a perception check on that roll. If they fail it, what other avenue do you have right there? They're going to get frustrated. They're not going to know what's going on. If you telegraph something, then that's basically saying, hey, you remember that dice roll that you just failed? It didn't really matter. And then that starts breaking down other dice rolls, because they need to matter if you're going to use them. If you just, you know, willy-nilly, it doesn't matter, it's fine, great. That being said, if you're using it for levels of success or failure, that's still something that you can kind of keep in play. The I don't know, the BBEG has a force field up or something, and this first round of combat, someone does a perception check to see if they can figure out what's going on. A high roll, they might notice the four crystals that are around the room to, you know, indicate, hey, this is what's holding up that force field. Low roll, they might see one of them. And then from that, they can kind of infer and look around and take some time, or shout out to the other players, look for another crystal or something. That gives you that, you know, integral thing that you need, but it doesn't give all the information. So a failure is really not completely a failure. And, but then again, if you roll a one, just beyond like you are just in awe of this force field or something, but you know, I still wouldn't even do that. I would give them something, because
yeah, I like that as an alternative, right? Like, if you really want to make someone roll something, know the absolute baseline of things you're going to give them regardless of what they roll, and then increase from there, you know, depending on how well they do. I really like to use that as some kind of a factor, so you can still introduce the storytelling randomness aspect of the dice, but not completely cut yourself off, because you should never put yourself in a situation where the players are just get stuck and just have nothing. Mm-hmm. Like you failed the one big thing, and now they have nowhere else to turn to. They have nowhere else to go. They don't know what to do next. You should never try and put yourself in that sort of a situation. I personally really like the high highs and the low lows. And sometimes I think, there was a really good episode of Adventuring Academy with Brennan and Sam Reich that aired somewhat recently on Dropout.
Yeah.
And Sam was mentioning that he liked it more when failure happened, because it gave the opportunity to tell interesting stories. And I, to an extent, I agree with that, because failure or low rolls or unplanned for things can make for very interesting storytelling, and can also really move your really move you creatively, mm-hmm. because now you have to deal with something you weren't expecting. And I think that's really cool. Like, and there's just moments, and this is just in the randomness of everything, there's just moments when the dice seem to tell the story that you're wanting to tell, or do things that seem to like up the climax to a point, but then, you know, save the day. It doesn't always happen, but it's, I cannot tell you how satisfying it is as a player and a DM when moments like that happen, like the end of my last campaign, when everyone was completely out of spell slots. Someone had died. The cleric has two diamonds left, but they also have their channel divinity, which gives them a spell slot back. So they channel divinity and they attempt a resurrection roll ritual on the player. It fails. So as usually for when I do death stuff like that, mm-hmm. I pull the person who's resurrecting into like this moment in time, into this in between. That is a moment or a safe spot or something having to do with the character who has died. And then they can talk through that type of stuff. And it's very, a very interesting thing. And in this case, the cleric goes and sees the person they're trying to resurrect, but they can't get to them because they failed the roll. And so in this case, then the DC goes up and the cleric is like, well, I have one diamond left and I have one channel divinity left. Gets another third spell slot back and rolls and gets it by like one.
That's great.
And then is able to have this super cool scene with the player and pull them back before they cross over. And that was purely the dice. Like that was nothing I've done. We knew exactly what the DC was for these things. They rolled it to me so that I knew and they knew, but the rest of the party did not know what it was. And that's, again, going back to the last one, that's a fun little DM storytelling beat, right? Mm-hmm. Is I can keep them in suspense when that happens, because all of those death save rolls were straight to me, not to anybody else. So only the player knew and I knew what they were. And so then I can tell a much more dramatic, interesting story, because the players are then on the edge of their seats going, what happened? Like, cause I could just see their faces when that first roll failed. And the person who has died is just like, oh my gosh, you could just see like the breath leave her and just like, oh no, my character is dead. Yeah. Right. And so it's a much more interesting, dramatic way of storytelling. And I just absolutely love how it works despite the low lows at times.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. And in my experience, I mean, as a player, yeah, low rolls can be frustrating. But the thing is that they're most frustrating in combat because there's really nothing that goes well with a low roll in combat other than you just kind of feel like you wasted your turn. Outside of combat, though, those low rolls can add so much to your character, can add so much to the plot, can add so much to just everything that's going on around you. You know, it in a game that I play in plus five to hit, I rolled a low roll and something very dramatic happened. And it changed an entire arc and thought process that this character has. And yeah, it might suck for a while, but you know what? The story possibilities that come from that are amazing. The new things that I can explore as a player are amazing. Working with my DM on it, it's great. I just, you know, he told me, hey, blah, 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 blah. I'm not going to say anything because that was between me and him anyways, but like, it's such a defining moment now in my character's life. And it was because of a bad roll. And I love that it happened. So yeah, it's one of those great things. I mean, a misperception check might change the course of an entire plot thread. But that's the thing. You get to see where that goes going forward.
I agree. And so, again, if you don't want the randomness, to be fair, there are other systems that will accommodate that better.
Yeah.
There really are. Like, it is totally, there are totally systems built around more of that just direct playing without taking away some of the randomness.
Yeah. Every failure has a but.
Yeah. So again, there are lots of good tabletop RPGs out there. And if you or your group, if that's the kind of play you want, there are systems that will accommodate that. And I'd say that not being able to think directly of the name of one off the top of my head. But I know there are.
Yeah, we've talked about some.
I know there are. Yeah. So it's one of those things that I may look up in the next episode. You may hear me say, remember that thing I said? Well, try XYZ, right? But otherwise, just know, just embrace the high highs and the low lows.
Mm-hmm.
From a storytelling perspective, from a group gameplay perspective, there are some really cool things that can come from that.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you for sending in the questions, for submitting them on Discord. If you have a question of your own, theindiscussions@gmail.com, our Discord, which is on our website, that you can get to and join. We have a show questions channel. You throw it in there. We'd love to talk about any of those type of topics. Before we kind of wrap up things a little bit, I already mentioned the Jenny D video. Yes, and isn't the great D&D device you think it is? Seriously, it's worth a watch. Go check that out. Her stuff is usually like 10 to 15 minutes long. And it's usually very, very good. So yep. Highly recommend that one. And then another clip that has been making the rounds. Someone on TikTok actually pulled out part of it and kind of broke it down a little bit. But this is the full clip. So Deborah Ann Wall, who is a big D&D player and dungeon master, was Karen Page on Daredevil series, did Relics and Rarities, which he did with Geek and Sundry. And Charlie Cox was actually on one of those two-parter episodes, which I highly recommend. It was a super fun episode. Honestly, Relics and Rarities in like just in general is an amazing actual play show. So then we can add that link to the show notes because I don't know if you've watched through any Relics and Rarities, but it is a gem.
Yes.
It's a gem of an actual play. And I highly recommend it because as a DM, you can get some really good DMing tips from Deborah Ann Wall. She's fantastic. But she joined John Barenthal, another Daredevil alum, on his podcast. And they were talking about Dungeons and Dragons. And she just basically starts walking him through an encounter. No dice, just they just went off. And it was one of the coolest things I've ever seen as far as how to really easily explain D&D and just tabletop RPGs in general, right? Because you could use a lot of systems to do what she did. She picked D&D because she knows it really well. It's very popular, and people, even if they don't play, will likely at least be aware of what it is or the connotations around it, right? So that from that standpoint, it's a very good like intro thing.
Yeah, it's essentially kind of turning into the thing to do going forward to instruct someone on what D&D or TTRPGs actually are.
Yeah. So definitely check it out. I think it's only like, you know, 10, like 15 minutes long. Yeah. Like it's super short. So, highly recommend checking that out. It's a masterclass on how to introduce people to D&D or tabletop RPGs in general. So definitely check that out. We'll have the links to those in the show notes on dndiscussions.com. And with that, Ben, I think we will wrap things up. Oh, I did want to mention real fast, because I know some people will like this. Brandon Sanderson, ever heard of him? Just a small town, small time writer.
Yeah. Writes some easy stuff.
Yeah. Writes about 10 million books a year. He's actually got a tabletop RPG Kickstarter going on right now. Originally thought was for the Stormlight Archive, which is his huge fantasy adaptation that he's currently writing right now. And a new book is actually coming out, I believe, in November, which I'm very excited for. But it's actually is the Cosmere, which is his big shared universe that he writes in. Tabletop RPG that is going to encompass all of his different worlds and books. So Stormlight, Mistborn, Elantris, all these different fantasy books and worlds are going to be encompassed in this tabletop RPG, and they have their Kickstarter going on right now. It looks to be, and from what I've watched on it, it looks to be D&D adjacent-ish. It's got a little bit of a different system for how like classes and like leveling and stuff works. It's got a special die that you use in storytelling that can kind of swing things one way or another. So it's not the cheapest thing in the world. It's got the Brandon Sanderson tax on it for sure, but it also has digital tool support on Demiplane, which is really cool. Big props to Demiplane for really bringing the digital tool set in for so many tabletop RPGs. They're an absolutely great site, especially if you're playing non-D&D things. So definitely check that out. We'll have a link to that in the show notes as well, if that sounds interesting to you. And with that, Ben, I think we'll start ending this up. But did you get to play at all between the last time we recorded and now?
So, as I said, we didn't end up playing my campaign last night. But last weekend, Nevermore and I went to Silver Dragon Games and went for a one-shot. They were doing a huge event with something like 6 to 8 tables or something like that, where it was the
One of those big, yeah, like everybody kind of contributes to a thing.
Exactly.
Oh, it was that's so cool.
The Diggy Hole event. Everybody was a dwarf. And the idea was that so basically all the dwarven clans get together and then they have a race to see who can get the most like gold and gems and stuff like that. So I will say this, going into it, we created our characters thinking we're going to have to be digging, we're going to have to be exploring, we're going to have to be trying to find, you know, gems, maybe you know, things like mold earth would come in handy and stuff like that, right? What we ended up getting was essentially the Mines of Moria. We were attacked by so many goblins. So it was so great. Cool. So Nevermore and I, actually, we did this for our 15th anniversary because we're just like, hey, let's do something great and fun and awesome. So we were there. I was Targaryen Rocknoggin, and she was Pebble Rolling Rock. And so, or no, Rolling Boulder. So we were we were tavern owners of the Rock and Roll Tavern Inn. And yeah, backstory didn't matter at all. It's fine though. We had fun making them. So we go in and we have like this big excavator things that our artificers have kind of put together that moves like, you know, 2 or 10 feet per round. And we're slowly starting to go, we're grabbing gold and everything like that. We're like, okay, cool. This is great. And then all of a sudden, goblins everywhere. And there were probably a good 50 of them on the board. And it was like, oh, this is not good. So the idea of the clan thing is get as much gold and stuff as you can. So we had what I would say is our tank, our barbarian fighter. He ran off and was gathering gold and stuff like that. Meanwhile, we had a bard who was driving the excavator thing. So he was like trying to kind of run over some goblins and defend that. We had a druid who was, you know, kind of doing stuff. Nevermore was a, what was she? She was something cool. Was she the druid? Okay, I don't remember anymore. Doesn't matter. Anyways, she was doing stuff too. I was a cleric. So basically I was doing everything I could to keep everybody alive as well as kill things. So we all realized nobody chose anything with AoE except for me, because I'm a cleric and one of my favorite cleric spells is Spirit Guardians.
Yes.
So
the old Spirit Guardians.
Yeah. So, I mean, we were level 5, so I had like 2 level 3 spells or spell slots. So I'm like, okay, Spirit Guardians, boom. And all of a sudden, like the minion goblins just evaporated around me. So my turns turned into me running around, getting everything in my radius just to evaporate it before, you know, like they killed everybody else. So as I'm doing that, I've got my spiritual weapon out and I'm healing people. So I'm like basically taking over as tank, healer, and damage in one encounter. And it was very hard.
Oh my gosh.
And then it got to the point where like the owner of the store came in and said, "Dwarves, your excavator is beeping heavily, which says return home now." And then we had a 10-minute break. So basically we were in the middle of the encounter. They just basically stopped the encounter, had a 10-minute break, came back, and we were all back at, you know, our dwarven underground city and stuff. And that's when the Balrog came, which everybody had, you know, a miniature Balrog that everybody was going to fight and stuff. And this is when it was 3 rounds and each table basically did damage to the Balrog, you know, did different things that they wanted to do and stuff. And it was so cool because, well,
that's neat.
We didn't contribute as much as a bunch of other tables. We only actually ended up getting through 2 rounds as opposed to 3. So we could have done better. I wasn't doing damage because I was healing everybody with like the last of my spell slots because, yeah, we had 100 goblins that we were fighting and everybody was taking damage. So big props to our druid, though. She randomly did a create food and water above the Balrog to like help extinguish its flames. So for 1 round, like the AoE fire damage that was going out just was gone for that round. Cause I'm like, that's a good idea. And, the DM gave the Balrog disadvantage at that point, cause it had food in its eyes from all the stuff that fell on it too. So I'm like, awesome idea. But anyway, so then after that, after the 3 rounds, the owner kind of tallied up the total and stuff and determined that yes, we did win. We got rid of the Balrog. And I mean, it was a lot of fun. It was really, really cool. So yeah.
What level was it?
Level 5.
Level 5.
Yeah.
How fun.
So like 8 tables of level 5 dwarves attacking a Balrog all at once.
That's super cool.
That's pretty great.
What if check for your friendly local game store. Sometimes they run cool events like that.
Oh yeah. And in fact, this upcoming weekend, they're doing an all-day D&D. They're having 3 time slots with like 6 games each, you know, 6 one-shots in there. So, while we were there doing the Diggy Diggy Hole, we were talking to someone who's going to be DMing there, and they're like, "Oh yeah, you know, some people just they sign up for a slot in each time slot, and it's literally D&D all day." So we're kind of talking about it. We're like, you know what? We can do this.
We should just do that.
Yeah. But we decided, okay, the middle time slot, we're going to not do anything so we can go and eat and have a break and stuff like that. So we're signed up for 2 one shots on Saturday. And
oh, that's so fun.
I am excited. One of them is a prisoner transfer. It's level 10. I am a tabaxi drunken master monk, so I'm super looking forward to that. And then the evening one is a pirate game, and I am going to be an elven arcane archer fighter. So it's going to be great.
That sounds super fun. I'm excited to hear the report from that one as well. Yeah.
You will definitely be hearing about that, because I'm sure I'll be talking about it a bunch.
Yeah. Awesome. Very cool.
How about you? How's the campaign going?
We had a session just the other night, and it was kind of a downtime session. So this is one of those ones where all 4 of the players knew they had time before our big like charity ball party event where all these like high end people are going to be, and they know at least one of them is very, very bad and will likely be there. So that's going to be a very interesting, it'll be a very interesting party, but, they've got a lot of, they're people that they live in this city. They have homes, they have businesses, they have things they got to do. So a lot of that was, this last session was them like taking care of some of this stuff, doing things they've been wanting to do for a little while. Checking in on people they rescued, going and buying things. So it was a very, very fun, just kind of downtime session.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things as a DM, those ones are always a little hard, because especially if all the players split up, you have to really try and juggle jumping between players so that you're not leaving out people for too long. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those ones too, where it's just like, I'm not expecting everyone to be like fully, you know, zoned in the entire time either. Right. It's one of those things where I know, yeah, there may be gaps where you aren't doing anything. So mm-hmm. that's totally cool. We were able to keep it, going pretty well. And everyone is getting ready, but one of our players is going to be gone for our next session. So, those of us who are left, I'm going to take a seat in the players' seat the next session we have for a one shot that one of our other players is running.
Oh, fun.
Based on like a 1940s like detective type thing. That is basically, it's D&D, but it's going to take place in like the real world, if the real world was basically D&D in the 1940s.
So Dresden Files.
Yeah. Something, the little Dresden Files. So I'm super excited about that. I'm going to be playing a fairy rogue.
Ooh.
No, not a fairy rogue. That was one concept, but I ended up going a fairy sorcerer.
Oh, that's cool.
I'm doing the Rune Child subclass from, I believe it was Tal'Dorei Reborn. So I'm excited. It's just a little level 3 one shot. It should be pretty fun. Especially anytime I do one shots now, I've been really trying to do, okay, what I haven't not played before.
Mm-hmm.
Like what classes have I not played before? I've never played a sorcerer. So I'm gonna try and play a sorcerer this time, because it seems real fun. So I'm excited for that one.
Yeah, this will be my first fighter that I've ever played coming up. So, like, I'm excited for that. And yes, I have played a Tabaxi Monk before, but I had so much fun with it. I wanted to do a different subclass. So
monks are fun.
Yeah, exactly. I just hope that an arrow misses me and I can throw it back.
Yes, the best part.
Exactly.
Definitely the best part. Well, I think that will wrap up the episode for tonight. Always a pleasure talking to you, Ben. But before we go, why don't you tell everyone real quick where we can be reached?
You bet. Best place to find us is going to be on our Discord. We will actually have a link to that in our show notes on dndiscussions.com. That is our website that has every other episode that we've ever done there. So, hey, go check it out. We'll have links to our Discord, also to our Blue Sky social account, which is at DN Discussions. If you're looking for Ryan specifically on Blue Sky, you can find him. He is at TBK Sword, and I am at Ben Baumhofer. You can always message us there. We love to hear from you. Or you can always send an email to dndiscussions@gmail.com. We are happy to read everything that you send. We reply when we can. And you know what? Sometimes we get some really good discussion topics from you guys. So make sure to keep sending those in. We love to, just kind of shoot the breeze and talk about the stuff that's sent in. It's pretty cool. If you are curious about what it's like when I play Dungeons and Dragons, or if you want to find out this big drastic change that happened to my character, go ahead and listen to Plus Five to Hit. It is an actual play podcast where we're going through Rime of the Frostmaiden currently, and we're getting near the end, and like I said, big changes for my character. Pretty cool. So check out Plus Five to Hit. With that, I believe that's everything. So Ryan, thank you very much for joining me tonight. It is always a pleasure talking to you about one of our favorite things to do. And everybody else, thank you very much for listening. Thank you for all of your support. Feel like, giving us a 5-star review wherever you listen to this, that'd be great. If not, that's still cool too. But that being said, everybody, until next time, make sure to roll high and be good to each other.
Take care, and we'll see you soon.